This is called the wall.
The Wall, a Parable by Gloria J. Evans. I don't know when I first began to build the wall. I suppose it was when it occurred to me that I could keep people out of my life by building a simple wall. The wall would be a kind of boundary, a kind of protection. At first, the little wall was only knee high. It was really quite attractive, made of native stone I had found in my life. The wall was so small that some people didn't notice it and fell flat on their faces. Others saw it, but would step over it and come very close to me. I found this very uncomfortable, so I built the wall higher. This was really much better, but soon I found that people would come and rest their arms on the wall while talking to me. Some stayed too long, and some were not my kind of people. And even when I edged the top of the wall with sharp stones, they didn't seem to notice. One day, one of them vaulted over the wall and stood right inside. This made me angry. I decided to build the wall higher. As I continued to build, I became more and more self-sufficient. I painted designs on the stones. I made arcs and colored windows that distorted the light so that no one could neither see in nor out. The wall pleased me so that I longed to show it to someone or explain how I had achieved each design. But I realized that no one had stopped by to talk for some time. Some walked by, not seeming to notice me or my wall. Others stood sadly by and watched me build. I thought they were jealous of my wall, and I resented them, all of them. One day, a man stopped to listen as I explained how I was building the wall. He wanted to come inside to see what I was doing. I explained to him that the whole purpose of the wall was to keep people on the other side. But I could tell he didn't understand or care. As he left, I went back to build the wall higher. I became so absorbed in my wall that I found little time for anything else. I searched my life for new and different stones. I found stones that I didn't even know I had. The design was very important to me. I would build and rebuild until it was just the way I wanted it. Some stones were so dear to me that I polished them carefully several times a day. Then one day I realized the wall was so high that I no longer saw anyone go by. I no longer heard anyone. Everything was quiet. "Is anyone there?" I yelled. There was no answer. It was dark inside the wall, and the air was foul. I sat there for a long time. It was quiet and dark and lonely. Only the whispers of my memories could be heard. I thought of those who did not like my wall, who had laughed at it, scorned it, been jealous of it. I sat in the shadows and listened for someone to come and tell me that they really liked it. But it was very dark and quiet, very quiet. I don't know how long I sat in the shadow of my memories, but one day I noticed that one of the stones didn't match as well as I had thought, and the wall was crooked. This was too much. I had thought my wall was perfect, but it was not. Frantically, I examined the wall, and sure enough, there were other imperfections. To add to the pain of my discovery, one day someone yelled from the other side, "Your wall is ugly! It is twisted and gray and misshapen." It was the day the flower fell at my feet that I began to cry. I ran to the wall and climbed to see who had thrown it over. By the time I reached the top, no one was there. I returned to the flower and sat for a long time, looking at its perfection. I began to see the folly of my wall and its imperfection. Floods of tears brought me to my knees. Oh, I am so alone. My wall is too high. My wall is imperfect and ugly. Everything is in vain. I have nothing left. Won't someone help me, please? Then a strange thing happened. Something inside me stirred like a baby quickens in its mother's womb. And in the stillness of my broken world, I knew in my whole being a blessed presence. I knelt there in wonder that God would come to me. And I wept with joy that I was not alone and that my darkness had been penetrated by his blessed light. For days I stood in the joy of God's presence. My walls shone with the warmth of his light, and I no longer felt cold and alone. I knew that he had watched me build my wall and that he had waited patiently for me to see. It was in vain. Finally, it occurred to me that he would know why my wall was so ugly. When I asked him, he began to teach me. Day by day, he showed me my error. He gave the stones names. "This stone is jealousy. You must remove it." Sometimes I would be reluctant. For days I would protest. This was my favorite stone. It was one I had saved and cherished for years. When I was finally ready, he helped me remove the stone. One day, when we had removed one of the heavier stones, a hand came through the opening. "Take it," he said. Hesitantly, I took the hand. For a long time, I stood in the warmth of that grasp. Somehow, I knew the hand and the one behind. It had been waiting for an opening in my wall. There stirred in me a hunger and a longing for human comfort. At first, I thought God's presence within my wall was enough. But with the coming of the hand clasp, I knew God had come to tear the wall down. A part of me wanted to spring forth, but another part of me cried out in fear. Why couldn't I keep a part of the wall? God's presence was enough. I looked at all the stones I had collected throughout my life. Some were still in the wall. The others God had stacked neatly in a corner. If I ever chose to rebuild the wall, I could. I begged him to throw them away, but he told me that in them I could test my strength. How they tempted me. One day, when God didn't seem to be around, I dashed over and picked up a cherished stone to rebuild my wall. It was then I realized that if I were to be strong enough to live without the wall, I would have to know the stones were there. I would have to know the name of each one. In knowing their names, I could not use them again without betraying him. One day, as I was standing by an open place, as we removed more stones, the light came in, and God's light would shine out. I began to look through the open places. I could see things I hadn't noticed for a long time. Dewdrops, ladybugs, sunbeams, and blades of grass. God told me many things and gave me gifts. The more I talked to him, the more I wanted to talk to him. I saw things I had never seen before and heard things I had never heard before. One day, as I was standing by an open place, a man stopped to talk. I told him about God's presence and how he had changed my life. The man said he understood. But, he said, if that's true, why do you have this block of resentment in your wall? I can't see him. The stone blocks the way. I looked, and sure enough, one of my most prized rocks lay directly in front of me, covering nearly one side of the wall. It had been one of the first stones I had placed. It was a large conglomerate of disillusionment, childishness, stubbornness, and other petty stones. I asked the man if he would help me remove it. I was so ashamed that God might see this large rock. The man did loosen the stone, and I thanked him as he went on his way. I wondered how I could ever remove that stone without help. I really tried. I tugged and tugged and struggled, but it only moved slightly. I sat down in despair. I knew the man was right. The stone must be removed. Oh dear, I said, how can I ever remove this one? It is so big, and I am so weak. Then God said, you cannot move it. But I must, I replied. The man said he could hardly believe you were here with me with that stone in the wall. Then God said, if you really want the stone removed, I will remove it. We went carefully over to the wall and chipped away each small stone until the large one was diminished. Even with the stone of resentment gone, people kept stumbling over debris and remnants of the wall as they walked through my life. There was a woman who knew God and had let him tear down her wall. She walked in, and I told her what he had done for me. And she told me what he had done for her. I told her how I had suffered so and that I would never forget how forsaken and lonely I had felt inside my wall. Yes, she said. Self-pity is a terrible thing. When she left, I found the stone of self-pity in my wall. It was wet with my tears. I dried it off and laid it with the other stones. The wall was almost demolished. I looked around at all the world I could see. I thought of his great love for me and breathed a deep sigh of satisfaction and pride that I should have come so far. Look how much I have accomplished, I thought. How much better I know God than some of those others out there. Poor unenlightened ones who don't know him nearly as well as I. It's so easy. Why can't they see? Overwhelmed by all God had done for me and all he had taught me, I stood upon one of the remaining stones and began to tell anyone who passed by what the presence of God had done for me. I was appalled that no one seemed to hear or understand what I was saying. I told them how dark and lonely it had been inside the wall and how he had come to help me tear it down, how vain it was to build walls. I noticed others working on walls and ran over to plead with them to stop, but no one would listen. In my frustration, I cried out, why can't they hear? Why can't they understand? Why can't they believe me? I laid on the stone I had stood upon. It was extremely large, highly polished. It had been my great prize. It was more than life size. Do you want the answer to your questions? God asked. You know I do. Raise your head and look at the stone you are upon. I raised my head and gasped, for I saw my own reflection in the massive stone. There was pride in my look and manner. I knew the stone was pride. Quietly, we removed it. Now we could see beyond the meadow, and a path led forth from where I stood. Then God said a strange thing. Now you must go. I will go with you, and yet I will stay here. But I don't want to leave, I protested. The wall still stands. There are other stones to remove. I want to be here with you. I said I would go with you. There is an opening in the wall for you to come and go. Do you remember the flower that fell at your feet, the hand that you clasped, the woman who showed you self-pity, or the man who showed you resentment? Oh, yes, I sighed. Oh, yes. Then, you must go and do likewise, for to whom much is given, much is expected. Wherever you go, I go with you. And whenever you come back here to be tempted or to remove more stones, I will be here. So I went forth. Soon, I saw a wall builder. He had just started to build his wall. I saw pain and hurt in his face and confusion in his frenzy to build. I leaned against the wall, wanting to tell him I understood, but the stones were placed so that the sharp edges cut me, and I retreated in pain. I stood by the wall, nursing my wounds. In sadness, I watched him build. Soon his wall was so high, I could not see him, and my heart ached because I knew it was dark and lonely inside. I called to him, but he could not hear. The ugliness of the wall was unbelievable. I reached out and touched it, leaned against it. I don't know how long I was there, but one day I heard someone yell, "Your wall is ugly. It is twisted and gray and misshapen." Strangely, though I had never heard a sound from the wall before, great racking sobs exploded from inside. Tears streamed down my face, and I cried in frustration, "Won't you help him? Please, please." I thought my heart would break. In desperation, I looked about. If only I could give him a gift to ease his pain. I looked down to find a small flower at my feet. Hastily, I plucked it and threw it over the wall. Then the sobbing stopped, and I knew a great peace, for in some strange way, I knew that God's presence had come to him, and that my aching heart and the gift of the flower had helped bring it about. I knew that soon there would be an opening in the wall, and I could grasp his hand. I knew, too, that he might never know that it was I who was there. But it really didn't matter, for in some wonderful way, I had become a part of every man's life. Through God's presence, we would all become one. Somehow I knew I would never be the same. I returned to my wall, and God was there. Together, we removed the stones of fear, mistrust, and indifference. God said, "Now you begin to understand love. Without love, all the things I have told you would be meaningless. You will begin to live in peace and understanding. You will learn gentleness and kindness, but it will take time. I will always be in you." So it was that I went forth reaching out, sometimes just waiting beside a wall, sometimes tossing a flower, sometimes grasping a hand. There are days that I return to my wall, I touched the stacked stones and examined the remnants of my wall. At times I am filled with a desire to rebuild it, but we talk, and he helps me be strong. Sometimes we remove another stone. It is strange that I begin to recognize others like myself. When I see someone with a flower, I know that it will be thrown over a wall. Sometimes I see someone standing by a wall, sadly watching a wall builder. I see those who are sitting on the stones, explaining what kind of stones they have used. I know that God is with them too. We pass on the path, and a great love passes between us. I see peace in their eyes and faith in their hearts, and I know that someday the walls will be down, and we will all walk free from place to place, the great family of God. The end.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Well, I'm going to read my text. If you guys can sit still, won't call you. You can just stay there. And I want you to listen to this wall. This wall, you saw all the negatives until it began to be broken down. And here I have this theme of building walls or defending our family or fighting for our family's future that comes out of Nehemiah. And I want you to know that lesson in its negatives is not what I want us to be about or God wants us to be about. So listen carefully, because within that story, there is also the positives of the flower throwing and all the other things that are contributed there. This comes out of 1 Peter chapter 2. I'm going to read about 10 verses, so here we go. Rid yourself of all malice, deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander of every kind. Fits the wall. Next line. Like newborn babies, crave pure spiritual milk, so that by it you may grow up in your salvation, now that you have tasted that the Lord is good. As you come to him, this is the part I want you to pay attention to now, the living stone, rejected by men, but chosen by God and precious to him, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For in the scripture it says, see, I lay a stone in Zion, a chosen and precious cornerstone, and the one who trusts in him will never be put to shame. Now to you who believe, this stone is precious. But to those who do not believe, the stone the builders rejected has become the capstone, and the stone that causes men to stumble, and a rock that makes them fall. They stumble because they disobey the message, which is also as they were meant to do, destined to do. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, the people belonging to God, and that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you have not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. My big people, you're going to have to run with me, because you're part of the children's sermon today. I want about 8 people, 4 and 4, 4 men, 4 women. Come on down. Don't wait for me to point a finger at you, or I'll grab you. Come on. Come on down. 4 men, 4 women. Girls will be... No, you're watching this one. You get to watch this. Come on down. Come on. Good. I need some more women here. There we go. Good, 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 good. Come on. 4 and 4. Well, I can count. We got 4 there. That's 2. This is 3. Sandy, sit down. You don't get to come up. You are in the play already. Come on. Oh, you're going to make me call on you. There we go. Woo! Now, I want to show you a brand new, different kind of wall, the kind of wall that God builds. And I want you to watch it, because if you notice, every one of these people up here are alive, right? Watch, move your arms, move around. They're moving, aren't they? Say something nice to the kids, real fast, all at once. See? They're alive. They're not like... which is what? Stones. They're what we call alive. Now watch. What God does is he likes to take people, stand them right out there, and connect them, arm in arm like this, with other people. And he begins to do that. And he begins to form what's really important, a rather significant thing called the body of Christ or the church of God. Get it in there. There you go. And you get over here. Oh, I got to put you on this side. I almost goofed it up there. Like that. And another one right here. Good. And another one on this side. And you're learning. Ah, now you ready? Now I need you to walk backwards and make it a circle. You guys stay there. You're making a circle. Very careful. There we go. And you lock arms. Ha! This is what we have. It's called a living wall. Now I got to get out of here, and I'm too big to try. You got to let me out. There we go. It's a living wall. Now I want to show you what's important. Suppose one of you falls down, fall down, and hurts herself. What would a rock do for you?
Nothing.
Nothing. Rock. But what would a living wall do? Show me, Mama. There we go. She picks you up, put her inside, and saves you and gets back in her spot. You see that? What if somebody is in trouble and they're hurt and someone is trying to hurt them and you see it and you're a living wall? What does the living wall do? Reaches out, takes you by the hand, and puts you inside for protection. You understand? There are dead walls like this, and this is usually the kind that people build. There are people and places in our lives just like this wall. And every one of those, indifference, bitterness, fear, pride, self-pity, are part of the things we feel. But when you deal with a living wall, here's a girl, and she feels really sorry for herself. Nobody loves me, just pretend. Nobody loves me. Nobody cares. But a living wall reaches down and puts you into the protection of the wall. Now, I want you to listen, okay? It's nice to have a living wall. It's also a little bit difficult because living walls do certain things. For instance, here's a person and the living wall looks at him and he's misbehaving. He's making noise in church. Make noise. And he wants to run around. Uh-oh. All right, what's the living wall going to help do? Stop. Whoop. Wait a minute. The living wall also tries to help you not do those things that are wrong. And sometimes it's because they want you to be a part of the inside group. There you go, put them inside. The inside group. Now, in my sermon today, the Lord does not want us to build walls like this. All right? He doesn't want those walls in big people or little people. He wants us to be what kind of stones? Living stones. Can you remember that? Living stones, because living stones know when to reach out. Or let's suppose this. One more. All right. Everyone, turn the circle a little bit clockwise to your right. Everyone take two steps to your right. Hey, three more. Keep going. Get some new people up front. Now suppose, there you go. Suppose you're one of the people that wants to hurt those people in the middle of the circle. All right? You're going to pretend to be, you know, like angry at them. Don't just, it's just pretend. Don't get too angry. It's just a little pretend. All right? And you're going to pretend to try and get through the wall to hurt those people on the inside. Go ahead. Just pretend. They reach down and they keep you from getting in, don't they? Because they're not a dead wall. They're a living wall. Good. Kids, you get to sit back down. Adults, you get to stand there. You get a treat here. Because don't walk away and don't pretend you don't want it. The wall, yes. The wall now gets fed. Everybody knows nothing worse than an angry wall or a wall that didn't get part of the treats. So grab what you want. There you go. Then you get to sit down. I'm not holding you in your position for life. I should have said ladies first. I know. I'm sorry about that. I missed it. You know, you've seen one rock, you've seen them all. All right. What kind of rocks does God want us to be? Living rocks, so that we know how to take care of people. If they're hurt, we lift them up. If they're trying to hurt somebody else, we tell them to stop. Okay? And since you guys did a really good job, I want to offer you a treat. You each get, ladies first. Got ladies first. Ladies first. Here you go. Ladies, grab one and go. After that's done, then the guys can go. All right, quick. All right, guys, hurry up. 5, 4, 3, 2. I'm taking them away. 2, 1. Grab one quick. That's yours. When I thought of the stones that we start using, or if we think of ourselves as building walls, we somehow think that means we're supposed to encapsulate and make sure all of us are guarded and protected. And I go, that's not what a living wall does. A living wall discerns when you need to be rebuked. A living wall discerns when you've been knocked down, you need to simply be picked up and loved on. A living wall also discerns when you're taking advantage of people. Or a living wall discerns when you think the world revolves around you. You see, it's not a dead wall. It's not stone. It's part of what the living wall is meant to do. And so we have here a description of what living stones are. And the invitation for us to, you know, guard, fight for our families and friends is not just so Lamb of God gets anywhere or does anything or exists, but it's a call to fight for those outside so that everything we do is designed to reach out and hold, lift up, encourage whatever is necessary, those out there, up to and including telling them, stop what you're doing. Quit hurting little children, or whatever the case might be. And so when you and I start thinking of ourselves as wall builders, I don't want you to picture stones. I want you to see all the negative things that play represented and how easy it is to build stones. Some of you have got walls like this built up between the people you're sitting next to. Some of you have got walls like that built up against one woman or one man or people in the church or just outside the church or somebody in your family. And I go, this is not the walls that God says or invites you to build. These walls divide. These walls destroy. These walls separate. These walls do not accomplish the purposes of God. There are men and women, husbands and wives, struggling with that kind of wall between them. There are friends who really aren't friends, but they're just smileys. They pretend it's all okay. But what they've really successfully done is put all the rocks in place only I won't talk to you about my jealousy. You have the perfect wife, perfect husband, perfect life, perfect house, perfect everything. I am so jealous of you, but I won't use that word. Instead, I'll smile and pretend. And there is no room for hypocrisy. That's called pretending. That's called wearing the mask. You understand? This text is not just floating in the middle of nowhere. Listen to them again. Rid yourselves, get rid of, throw aside, cast it aside of all malice, which is that attitude of undermining and wickedness toward people, that kind of idea. And then it says, rid yourself of deceit, which is the ability to manipulate. You ever manipulate people? I know you don't want to do this, but I'm just going to say this anyway and accomplish it. And then you can't, you understand? And you can do that up, you can do it down, you can manipulate your kids, you can manipulate people you so-called love, and all it really is self-control, selfishness, pride, arrogance, and everything else, causing you to behave in a certain way. And so here's Peter. He's going, listen, you guys, we can't make this thing work until you understand what it means to become a living stone. Every part of those attitudes, malice and wickedness, are like stones in your life. They won't move, they won't change because they refuse to be touched by the tenderness or the mercy of God. And so watch the next one. Hypocrisy. I don't want any mask wearing. Oh, my life is just wonderful. I don't ever sin. Too bad that you do. Right? And I, of course, am never jealous. And I don't have any problem with bossing people. Oh, wait, I didn't mean to say that. You understand? We get so many trick things in our own life that we actually somehow begin to believe them. And the trouble is, here he is, I want this out of you. I want envy and slander of every kind. And I want you, here's a key phrase, I want you to crave milk. You ever notice something about newborn babies? They're real cuddly and warm and friendly and everything wonderful. And yet there's one quality about them that sets you on edge. It's time for my milk, right? And you go, is that really what they're like? Yeah. I mean, they can get a little smelly and a few other things like that. But the reality, what is it? It's this, God's going, I want you to crave my word. Have you ever seen that baby who's been crying, all of a sudden you bring the bottle or the breast or whatever it is, and you bring it close, and they wiggle and they shut up instantly. And I go, he says, I want you to crave the word like that. I want you to crave the intimacy with me like that. And he points out and he says this, like pure spiritual milk, so that, I mean, there's a byproduct of this in the verse. It's in verse 3 there, or 2 or 3. You crave that milk so that you may grow up. What did you think? Life was going to be easy? Having kids was going to be easy? You may have thought they were easy when they were a month old. You know, my wife always thought they were easy when they were inside. They got a little tougher once they got out. You didn't have to wake up in the middle of the night. You just had to roll over, give them some space to move or something. But you begin to understand life is tough. Do you think it's going to be easy to fight for your family's future? Do you think for one second that the enemy is going to lay down and just let your marriage get well again? That he's going to lay down and let you suddenly become the perfect parent, but you don't want to work at it? One of the hardest things I had to learn as a parent is that real parenting is work. I told you this many, many times. The first time I read in a book, and it was The Christian Family by Larry Christensen, just changed my life. It said this question. It says, when you give your kids a command, when you ask them to do something, how many times do you ask? So, well, what do you mean? How many times do you lie to them? We're getting ready to go. Dad, you told me that 10 minutes ago. No, we are getting ready to go. Stand there with your coat on while we talk and pretend we're having a great time with this family. You know, I go, all of a sudden, this book brought every part of my personhood as a father into question. You understand? Come and have supper. They don't come. I said, come and have supper. They don't come. I said, your mother said, supper's ready. Get in here now. They don't come. I am going to come in there. You do stuff like that? How many times did you ask? 4, 5, 6? How many times did you teach your child was the right number to respond to? 4, 5, 6. I go, holy cow, the problem is me. The problem is I make promises to my kid, we're leaving in 10 minutes, but we don't leave. You can play when we're really ready to get out the door and your mom's got her coat on and she's sitting in the car warming it up. Right? I began to learn, don't make a promise you're not going to keep. And certainly don't make a threat. And for goodness sakes, if you want them to come on the first call, have them come on the first call. We're having supper. I need you to come in here. Boom. You understand? I had to figure this out. I realized that I can't just simply make an assumption that these qualities, these characteristics, these sacrificial attitudes just kind of flow into you like nothing. They are challenged by every part of your sinful nature. They're challenged by the fact I just like being lazy. Or I turn it on, you know, it's not really not my fault. I thought your mother was ready to go, and you know her. She just keeps talking and talking. Can't talk, right? You ever do that? That's what God said. Talk to her about your wife that way, right? And I go, no, he didn't. Do you understand? This challenges you to what it means to be a living stone. And for goodness sakes, do you think that circle is you alone and that circle has to be obedient to you? Do you understand that one person in the circle may see the need and reach into it and pull them in differently and faster or slower than you do? Because they have a different heart toward those situations. And one part of the circle, and I didn't know how to quite illustrate it, but it could take a beating. And as you watch this thing try to pressure in, those around the rest of the circle begin to gather with and say, no, you leave that part of our circle alone. And so there is this defensiveness that the living body of Christ, the living stones, have to have. And there's also this insight, this reality that the living stones need to have. So you watch what it does next. It says, now that you've tasted, and the Greek goes, if you've tasted that the Lord is good. Do you really understand the Lord is good, or do you just think that's the pastor talking? If you don't get that, why would you want it? You understand? This is a text that goes, if you've really tasted that the Lord is good, you'll understand how living stones work. And you'll understand that you're only part of the living stone wall. You're only part of the ministry. You're only a portion. And it doesn't matter whether you're the pastor or anybody else in the fellowship. You are here in this situation. And so I go now, watch what he does next. Just a few more verses with me. As you come to him, the living stone, that's viewing him as alive, not dead, very capable. Also understand what this means as it connects us all together. Rejected by men, you can figure that one out. They didn't want him. But chosen by God and precious to him. They didn't like Jesus. I don't like Jesus when he tells me to love people. I don't always like to be told that. I don't like Jesus when he tells me to forgive somebody that I think he ought to kick their butt for. I don't like Jesus when he asks me to wake up in the middle of the night. I don't like him when he asks me to pray, get on my face and my knees. I don't like Jesus when he tells me, can you please learn submission? Oh, God, you don't know what my principle's like. He says, you're right, Bruce. I'm too stupid to know what your principle's like. You don't know how hard it is for me. Yeah, you're right, Bruce. I've never seen your life before. This is my brand new moment for me. What do I know? And you begin to go, am I capable of that kind of idiocy? Yes. God says, you got to get rid of that. You got to put it out there. You got to remove it. Because everything else you do that brings that back hinders what God's trying to accomplish. And so watch what he does as he finishes this off. You also, like living stones, and this is the phrase, are being built into. We're putting you together. This is a household. This is, we're building the Waltons. You know, night, John boy. but the idea you're building this thing into what it's supposed to be. And it's not supposed to be walls and bricks and unmovable parts of stubbornness, arrogance, and stupidity. It's supposed to be submissiveness. And one part of the wall may have to turn and minister to the other part of the wall. Because sometimes the living stone breaks down because life has just been a little bit overpowering for them. And what do? Beat on them? Humiliate them? Kick them while they're down? Yeah, that's what church does. Yeah, that's why we handle it. I mean, it's your sin. Too bad for you. How sad. And I go, is that what we're going to do? Because you have to realize when God calls us to fight for our family's future, this fight is real. And the first person you have to fight is your own nasty self. Your own wall-building characteristics. Your own justification of why you can't, shouldn't, don't want to, and all the other things. And you put all those stones in place, and you wonder why it's not working. Why people aren't interacting with you, because there's a part of you that has chosen to build that kind of wall than to become a living stone and a part of the wall that Jesus is calling us to. And so that's the challenge for us as we finish off this text. Now watch. Built into a holy wall, writes this, built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. And I couldn't think of a better example of a spiritual sacrifice than Isaac. I pick up one of the children and I lay him on the altar like Abraham laid Isaac. The love of his life, his only child, his only son. Isaac, go sacrifice your son. It wasn't the issue of the boy. It was an issue of the father. Now I know that your heart belongs to me. Now I know, and you know it too, because you are willing to take your son, your only son, and offer him up as a sacrifice. And so you begin to understand this text as it begins to open up here. See, I lay a stone in Zion, a chosen and precious cornerstone, and no one who trusts him will ever be put to shame. Now, the word cornerstone is really a fascinating one. A cornerstone is literally, it's usually very carefully cut, and it's a rectangular, square, whatever they're going to do, but it has 90 degrees angles off of it. And that stone determines which way the church is going to face, the group is going to be built, because every line comes off that stone. That is the stone that determines the direction. We're not used to that. We're used to them sitting there with transits and everything else they use, and they put the stakes in and everything else like that. But this piece, this cornerstone, was set up in such a way that everything else is measured off it. So now the wall is perfectly straight and the other wall becomes 90 degrees exactly off of it. And it is built in that kind of sensitivity. And it says, Jesus is the cornerstone. If he is not the cornerstone of the kind of living stone, remember, he's a living stone. He's not dead. That's why he doesn't treat this young man the same way he treats this older man or this young man different than that woman or anybody else, because he's a living stone. He's not meeting your needs in some arbitrarily singular fashion like, hey, I don't get you. You're so complex. It's so difficult to figure out what you want. He's not doing that. He says, measure yourself off me. Build your entire building, church, group, whatever you want to say, off me, and you'll start to understand the significance of it. And then he goes on, finishes it off. Now to you who believe, this stone is precious. But to those who do not believe, that stone's just nothing else but a piece of junk. It sits out there and nobody wants to measure themselves to it. So you look at your family and you look at those around you and you look at your relatives, in-laws, and they kind of go, how in the world are they building their house? Why are they doing this? It's like building your house with half of it hanging over a cliff. It's like building the house half on the rock, half on the sand. It's what's happened to you. How come you're doing this? And the answer is, I made a mistake. I didn't like the cornerstone. And so you begin to understand this process that he's going through, and he finishes off a stone that causes men to stumble, a rock that makes them fall. Please understand, it is not easy to be a godly parent. I found it unbelievably difficult. It's unbelievably difficult to be a godly husband, a godly wife, a godly employee. I don't care what you pick. I'm not giving you the option because God isn't giving you the option. He says, I don't want that. That's junk. That divides people, destroys people, segregates people, justifies sin and everything else it does. I want a living stone. And I want a stone that's living because I am in them. And I want your whole life, everything you build around your life and in your life, measured off me as your cornerstone. You know, God, I'm way out here and your line's way back there. He goes, yeah, I know. Well, God, you want to twist a little bit? No. But God, I need to be out here. You see, I feel I'm in the right spot. Yeah. What do you mean I have to go back? You mean I'm not supposed to? Right? That's what he's challenging us to do. And he finishes this last of his story. They stumble because they disobey the message, which is what they were going to do the way it was said. If you continue to behave like this, it's going to cause the destruction of you, your family, your marriage, your life, your children, and everyone around you. Wait a minute, is it really that serious? Just, yeah. What do you think? You can build your house on the sand or build half of it on the rock? What's wrong with you? How did you get this thought in your head? And the answer comes back, it came right from the pit, right from the enemy. And when God stood up and immovably said, you will do what I've asked you to do, you shouted him down and refused to let him be your cornerstone. Finishing it off. But you, now I love this part, you got to hear it. You are a chosen people. You are part of the wall, all right? You're a royal priesthood. You are the one that needs to intercede for the person that isn't smart enough to intercede for themselves. Well, my mother is so stupid, she doesn't get it at all. Good, are you praying for her? Well, what do you mean? Well, if she's too stupid to pray, who's praying for her then? You mean you want me to pray for her? Yes. You understand? You're the royal priesthood. You are a holy nation. You're a people belonging to God so that out of you, you will declare the valor. This word is, you know, I don't know what they have here, the phrase here. It really is declare something. I can't figure the other word out. But it says declare the valor of God, the heroic behavior of God. What did he do? He took a stone like me and brought it to life. You understand? God's in the business of making people living stones. Without God, we are nothing different than these two pieces of stone or rock up here. And so here's his invitation. This call for us to be part of the wall building, part of the thing that we're called to do, part of the ability to fight. It means fight for my child, which means what? I am going to call him once and then I'm going to stand right up and go get him. If I tell them to clean their room, I will go right back in again 2 minutes later, however long it is, and I'll make that decision. I'm either going to help them clean it up, or I'm going to bring discipline to bear in the situation, or whatever is appropriate. But I'm not going to call them 5 times. I used to whistle. You guys that know me know I have a whistle. You know, and I can whistle pretty loud. When I whistled to the kids, I said, if you can't hear my whistle, you're in big, big trouble. It means you're in somebody's house without permission. And when I whistle, I am going to whistle once. Okay? And then I want you to come. Because if you don't, I will be coming to knock on the neighbor's door. When my daughters got old enough to date, I told the guy, you bring her home by 9:30, 10:30. Well, I'd say, what time do you want to be home by? And she'd tell me 10:30, 11:30, whatever time it was. Said, okay. And I'd look at him and I'd say, if it's 11:31, I want you to know I will be getting in my car looking for you. And I'm not joking you. I don't know what I'll do to you. I used to be a lot younger and stronger. Now I don't know if they go, yeah, you're so old, you can't even catch me or something. But, you know, thank goodness my kids are old enough now. But you understand there is this, Lord, I need to be held accountable. I need to become that living stone. I need to understand you're not looking for wall builders that do this. You can't make a church work with people who build walls like that. You can't make a family work. If you're busy having a self-pity party every day, you can't even work it in your family. They won't even know what to do with you. They'll be trying to figure out how to throw the flower over. Get ready, Carol. And I want you to listen as we hear this song. And I goofed on that one. I told you to sing, but this will be a perfectly good time to do this. Carol's going to sing a song kind of over you. I think the words are in the bulletin. I'm not sure. But I want you to listen to it because it's the heart of God for us. Go ahead, Carol.
If I were you, I would have given up on me by now. I would have labeled me a lost cause, 'cause I feel just like a lost cause. If I were you, I would have turned around and walked away. I would have labeled me beyond repair, 'cause I feel like I'm beyond repair. Sometimes you don't see me like I do. Somehow you're still here. You're the God who stays. You're the God who stays. You're the one who runs in my direction. When the whole world walks away, you're the God who stands with wide open arms. And you tell me nothing I have ever done can separate my heart from the God who stays. I used to hide every time I thought I let you down. I always thought I had to earn my way, but I'm learning you don't work that way. Sometimes you don't see me like I do. Somehow you're still here. You're the God who stays. You're the God who stays. You're the one who runs in my direction. When the whole world walks away, you're the God who stands with wide open arms. And you tell me nothing I've ever done can separate my heart from the God who stays.
Ready, Dave.
My shame can't separate. My guilt can't separate. My past can't separate. I'm yours forever. My sin can't separate. My scars can't separate. My failures can't separate. I'm yours forever.
No enemy can separate. No power of hell can take away. Your love for me will never change. I'm yours forever.
You're the God who stays. You're the God who stays. You're the one who runs in my direction. When the whole world walks away, you're the God who stands with wide open arms. And you tell me nothing I have ever done can separate my heart from the God who stays. You're the God who stays. You're the one who runs in my direction. When the whole world walks away, you're the God who stands with wide open arms. And you tell me nothing I've ever done can separate my heart from the God who stays.
Amen. We're going to skip a collection right now. We're going to go right to communion.